Welcome to the Desert Sanctuary with Carl and Laura Forehand.
Often when we have doubts about religion or simply want to ask questions, it can feel like we are wandering out into the desert.
We would like to invite you to join our sanctuary, the Desert Sanctuary.
We've tried to pick guests that would resonate with and challenge us and our fellow seekers here in the desert.
We believe that a key to the journey is to keep asking good questions, and we believe that all stories are sacred.
Our hope is that you will find life and healing for your body and mind, and that you will be able to be where you are and be who you are.
And now, here is our show.
Hey everybody, and welcome to the Desert Sanctuary. It's just me today, and maybe for a few more episodes. Laura helped with the second in this series, and so that one, the one about worship, will be with her. But she's really busy right now and got a lot of things on her plate, so I'm just going to continue on, and I hope you'll endure. If you can endure it, there's plenty of other episodes. You don't have to listen to this one. We are kind of focusing on our book, Leaning Forward, which we released last fall. I'd like for it to do better, of course, as always, but I just wanted to kind of open up some topics that were in the book. And one of them is letters from the desert or messages from the desert. I can't even remember how I termed it. But when we do these interviews, when we talk to people and we hear their stories, we consider that sacred. But also we learn from them and we start to see common themes emerge when we talk to different people from different walks of life and different experiences. And when they are leaving their faith or questioning their faith, coming out into the desert, as we call it, they tend to have some common themes that they talk about. They tend to talk about the same things eventually, and those things start tying together over the years. So for the past few years, we've recorded 300 episodes. We're down, getting closer to 350. It's crazy. But there's always somebody to talk to, and there's always a story to hear while we're out here in the desert. But what are these common themes that people continually bring up again and again? One of them has to do with going inside. So the Bible said the kingdom is within us, but because of religious conditioning, we avoid this internal work. The map is not as important as the treasure. And the treasure is within us. So many of us create all kinds of diversions away from this introspection because we sense something is challenging about it. And make no mistake about it, it is challenging. Some people call it the darkness that we face. Some people talk about shadow and inner child and things like that. So I don't deny the fact that internal work is it's damn hard. It is painful. When I go through some of it, sometimes I weep. It's deeply rooted. And so that's where you have to go. You have to go inside. For me, that was through contemplation, mindfulness, learning to be still. Even using an old Christian practice called centering prayer, where we don't do anything except be still. Not ask for anything. Don't expect anything, don't have a mantra, none of that, even though I do some meditation and mindfulness work. The methods are as individual as each person, but get some help. Get trauma-informed people to walk with you, see a counselor, but figure out how to go inside because, you know, your trauma is stored in your body. And when your trauma is stored in your body, you're going to have to get in touch with that. You're going to have to feel that again. And when you feel it, you have a good chance of integrating it and getting better. That's what people say. And that's what I testify to. Go inside. Go within. And that's where you're going to find the healing. The second thing is trusting ourselves. Most religious structures themselves surround a hierarchy. So their practices and beliefs may have started with a personal quest for understanding, but when an organization becomes larger than a dozen or so people, they must be managed and controlled. Hierarchies help maintain this control and control is more manageable when only certain people are disseminating proper beliefs. And any debate about the best way to run organizations, churches, and countries, still, it's evident what this process does to the average person. When leaders want to control their organizations, the people that are not in control have to believe that what they think and what they feel inside is not as important as what other people think and feel. They were elected or appointed or placed in charge, so we assume they must be better than us. And even though we might not hear just shut up and do your job at church, but we might hear things like get on the bus, be a team player, don't ask questions, just get busy, and don't just be hearers of the word, be doers. Just go do something. Go read your Bible. Go pray. Go get involved in some projects, and then you won't have time to complain. So this idea of inner knowing was really discouraged by the religions that I participated in. And just never had the idea. We were taught you can't trust yourself. You shouldn't trust yourself because you're wicked and your insides are wicked and all that stuff. But I'm not suggesting we never learn from groups or spiritual guides, but the pivotal moments will be when we say things like, I don't need their approval and I can trust myself. It's very big. The next thing is agency for ourselves and advocacy for others. Agency for us. Advocacy for other. Agency is the ability to make decisions and act independently, which needs to be promoted within most organizations. As little children, we have agency, but parents foster in us a feeling of control, and eventually we can take responsibility for our own lives. We just don't have much agency when we're children, and we eventually should get more and more. But sometimes religion takes that away. The amount of control over the agency of underlings could be closely related to the engagement with fear and control. If fear is our top motivator, it causes leaders to suppress the agency of the individual because they need to have control. And it comes out the same way in advocating for others. We must advocate for other people who are marginalized, vulnerable, or discriminated against. Sometimes this comes across as anger, or it might make people uncomfortable, but change only occurs when people are willing to be brave and stand up for each other, and it will always upset the status quo and invoke resistance. This next thing is beliefs and theology. Sometimes I post provocative statements on Facebook just to get a reaction. This usually has the expected reaction of drawing out the grenade throwers into the conversation. Some are offering scripture quotations, others are gaslighting, but most are just defending their organization's expected norms. For Christianity, this story has evolved. Initially, there were several different views on most things, and people, there were not any official organizations. It took about 300 years before the creeds and the canon of scripture were organized. Once it reunited with the empire, it was easier to control, and we relinquished most of our spiritual control and reasoning to the Pope and the Emperor and those that served under them. About 500 years ago, some Christians called Protestants, reclaimed some of their agency and assumed the right to interpret scriptures for themselves. The Bible then became a paper pope for Protestants, even though no one can agree on the right interpretation of the scriptures. According to the Center for Study of Global Christianity, there are about 45,000 Christian denominations, which indicate our inability to, quote, get it right. So for 2,000 years, we have yet to make much progress. I'm approaching 60 now, and I don't want to spend the rest of my life trying to resolve a conflict that has raged since its inception. I want to discover what is true while journeying through life, not while debating ancient writings, reciting creeds, or defending the current position. I don't call myself a Christian anymore, and I can't find any evidence that Jesus promoted this method of ineffectiveness. The next thing we hear people say a lot is they talk about love and compassion. Love is one of the easiest things to get people talking about. However, their views about it are heavily influenced by their individual experiences. If a person was taught that God is retributive and that love has some conditions to it, then their actions and their views may be distorted, even though they believe they're right. Regardless, I'm glad that love survived deconstruction for me. It's one of the common themes among people of all spiritual backgrounds. But another word that's just as important is compassion. And later I'll talk about mercy and compassion in another episode. But without having the same discussion here, mercy forgives a transaction or a transgression. But compassion can lead us to heal. It's important in friendships, inner work, inner child work, and even in our meditation. When we accept the role of the observer, our primary mission is to show compassion for others and ourselves. In so many ways, understanding and exhibiting compassion in my life has changed me for the better. I have no use for any understanding of God that is not rooted in compassion. If my friend is not compassionate, then I will have to set boundaries and consider the terms and tenure of our friendship. This is the main reason my view of a retributive God was one of my first beliefs to be reformed toward a more restorative version. How can God be worse than me? He has to be compassionate. Another word that almost everyone talks about is authenticity. Around the time I turned 50, I experienced a dark night of the soul. I don't know for sure, but it was intense and required serious healing work. The right teacher showed up, and I was able to begin the necessary growth and healing. At that time, I took a little time off and later accepted jobs that were more manual labor and less career-oriented. But some of the work was freeing and beneficial. But at the least, it gave me time to process what I was learning, unlearning, and realizing. One of the things I was determined to do for the second half of my life was become more authentic. One of the people that taught me about presence and authenticity was a man with no name in a tea shop in Taiwan. After my vacation there and some time to reflect, I wrote about it, and I decided to embark on this journey of presence and authenticity. I wrote about that in my third book called Being. Authenticity is one of those things that we like to all believe that we possess, but most times we are faking ourselves out. It requires us to look deep into ourselves and understand who we are, what we want, and what we value. Then we can simply live out those truths in an amazingly simple and determined way. There's nothing harder than being authentic, but there's also nothing better than living from the truth within us. The guests on our podcast confirm it. Being authentic is one of the best and greatest gifts we can give back to ourselves and the world around us. Another big word, as I just mentioned, was presence. I think presence goes with authenticity. I describe it, presence, as being where you are, being here, being present. And I describe authenticity as being who you are. While we were in the tea shop, The man with no name made us feel special because he was present with us. Up until this point, most of my thoughts were future trips where I hoped to mitigate the road ahead with the appropriate amount of planning and a perfect itinerary. But from the beginning, our trip to Taiwan seemed like a disaster because everything I planned didn't work out right. From the moment I crashed my scooter, I began to consider the way I was approaching this vacation may have been wrong. This led me to conclude that the adventures can't be scripted, and that most times the things we plan for don't even happen, or they happen differently than we imagined they would. The man with no name was present, and he showed us an example of being where we were. When we are not future tripping, most of the time we are dwelling in the past. The trauma and regrets of the past can be heavy. I realize that visits to the past can be helpful, sometimes to resolve that trauma, but we can't dwell on it or stay there too long. Sometimes we have to be present with the past, and when it is integrated, we must come back to the present, which is the only place we can effectively live. Another word that I just spoke to my wife the other day when she was struggling a little bit with imposter syndrome when she was helping out with a trauma conference. I encouraged her to get big, and that may sound a little funny, but guests on our podcast have described the necessary survival skill of getting small. It's a technique that many engage when they are in high control situations like toxic religion and controlling families. The leaders of these organizations, although not officially trained, are very skilled at manipulating people and using shame, fear, and control to maintain the status quo in their groups. Since they are often hierarchical and controlled by men, often the victims of these systems are women and children. Because they're like frightened children themselves, sometimes it's like the toddler in charge. They're afraid of the unknown, so they attempt to control everything around them. Then the women and children that don't have means of escape learn how to be small and fly under the radar. They don't make waves very often, and they find ways to express themselves subtly so as not to attract a lot of attention. As you may gather from the chapter about parenting, I was one of the controllers, especially since I was a pastor in an evangelical church and a conservative parent. It went with the territory, and I now regret it. I was afraid, but I was taught that God was on my side and that I was right. So I numbed my fear with controlling activities. I'm so sorry that I caused people to have to be small in my presence. And now I look for ways every day to help them get bigger. We have some great conversations with our children and hundreds of people that are leaving organized religion. I hope we are making a difference. Most of the people out here in the desert also talk about connecting to earth and nature. Especially in the warmer months, I have trained myself to get up earlier, and many times I just sit on my porch and meditate and write by talking into my phone. Sometimes when I'm meditating or just sitting still, I can feel nature come to life all around me. I observed some time ago that nature has a drumbeat and a rhythm to it. The animals and the rest of nature don't seem to be distressed or worried, and it demonstrates the presence and authenticity that I discovered in the tea shop. One day, I was encouraged by a friend to go to a certain nature walk type of place where there were all different kinds and varieties of trees from each of the 50 states. It was called the Forest of Friendship, and there I made another discovery about nature. Deeply set into an alcove of trees were a set of benches shaped in a horseshoe. I decided to stay for a while in this beautiful location. For whatever reason, I played a song on my phone called the Cherokee Morning Song, So, and as I sat and I contemplated my life, before long the thought occurred to me, I am a part of this, and this is a part of me. I don't want to tell you exactly how to interpret that, but it was deeply meaningful for me and my journey. Many of our guests on the Desert Sanctuary podcast tell us comparable stories and proclaim their affinity for nature's wisdom. Nature requires little of us except to be kind to it and to preserve it as best we can. Mostly, I have observed that nature has something to give and it's willing to share if we'll take the time to be still. We also hear a lot about asking questions. For many years, I was a pastor and I was expected to be the answer man. People treated Jesus the same way. They would ask him a question and he would respond by asking them a question. I talked about listening before, but one of the best ways to be a good listener is to ask open-ended questions. When people have to answer something other than yes or no, it's harder to be leading when we ask questions this way, and we don't have to think about what we're going to say in response to them. We just listen better. The question that pays off are the questions to which we are genuinely seeking answers. The better we ask, the better answers we get from the universe. As I've learned to ask better questions, some of my old beliefs have fallen by the wayside. I changed my views of organized religion and I'm generally happier and more peaceful. I haven't gained all the answers, but I am at peace with my journey of discovery that continues. My first book was called Apparent Faith. In it, I began to ask questions based on the assumption that God has to be a better father than me, if God exists. So I started asking questions about American nationalism, hell, and other basic religious assumptions that I had inherited from my ancestors. So later on in these podcasts and in the book, Leaning Forward, when I start talking about beliefs, please understand these are the areas that I am still looking into. I'm not trying to convince you to think like me. In some ways, I want to warn people when they are confined to high control situations because they're afraid. I want to advocate for them and listen to them when they break free. But a happy world to me is not where everyone agrees with me. A happy world for me is where people ask lots of questions. So what's the future like? What do we determine from all these people? I want to say, first of all, I can't predict the future. I grew up in a world where everyone was predicting the second coming of Christ every single year for all different kinds of reasons. The times I've tried to predict the future, like organizing and orchestrating plans for a vacation, I failed miserably. But even though we cannot predict the future, we can get a handle on reality, what is fair, what is just, what is true, and then we can proceed to organize our world around those things. People always want to know what I believe. Sometimes they say, you talk about what you're against, what are you for? So I promise I will share what I think will be the direction of the future. But first, let me be clear about what we're moving away from. One of those things is creeds and belief statements. The spirituality of the future will not be confined to a creed or a belief system. It is extremely hard for me to believe that we discovered exactly the right words to describe what we would believe 1,000 or 1,500 years ago. The people of the past, including the people that wrote the Bible, were on a quest to discover what is true and what God was like. When they discovered things, they wrote them down, sometimes. But nothing about the things people wrote down needs to be eternal for us to show respect and reverence for their quest. We also realized that in some cases, they were definitely wrong. They were absolutely wrong. What I mentioned earlier, that we are finding some common things that we resonate as true out here in the desert, I didn't mean that those things will necessarily survive into perpetuity. That's a big word. I may be discovering what others have discovered and clarifying it in today's language, but it's still just a piece of the puzzle for us to consider. Certainty in systems will certainly have to go. Most of us were taught to pursue certainty. We love to have a sense of what is going to happen, where we're going, what we should believe, all those kinds of things. We hold on to certainty and we call it faith. However, certainty is the opposite of faith. Just because we are certain about a fact doesn't make it true and requires less faith to believe it, not more. One of the most liberating and exhilarating things for me has been to allow myself to say, I don't know. Our perceived certainty makes us a slave to it. Once we proclaim that we know for sure about a certain thing, we spend too much energy defending it instead of continuing our quest and journey towards a better understanding. Most of the stories we hear in the desert contain this idea. People feel like they give up their need for certainty. All of a sudden, it's like they're young again and they're able to pursue and discover deeper and greater truths because they're not defending an understanding from a specific point in time. The temptation is great out here in the desert to find a new system that explains everything. Certainly things like quantum physics and the discoveries of Carl Jung give us hope that answers are being provided to us many of the things we've always wondered about. We find more clarity, but does that mean we need to organize into a group, a system, or a tribe? I don't think so. We're hardwired for connection. It helps us to have people we can talk to about things we're struggling with or the things we've discovered. But we fight the urge to think that if we develop a big enough group, then we will be able to control the narrative. Although it builds on our need for connection and community, this is the wrong way to approach it, because anytime something becomes an organization, it is prone and almost destined to follow the dark paths that organized religion has gone down. In the desert, we are beginning to realize that we need only a few good friends to satisfy and nurture us. It is similar to our practices, and when we find the ones that suit us, it becomes not only deep, but also amazingly simple. Recently, we've seen all the areas of religion and politics crash and burn because they believed they could just get enough control, all their fears would be alleviated. The quest to gain control of politics that began in the 80s ended in disaster in 2016. The mission to join religion with the state 1,700 years ago is still traumatizing us today and making spiritual endeavors even more difficult. Instead of forming new, powerful groups, I suggest we find a few people that will listen and some to which we can listen. We'll change the world if we can begin to live from within and with authenticity. The perfect doctrine or the biggest organization has never materialized as effective long-term. Only personal love and compassion and deep listening can do things like that. I would also suggest that we move away from fear-based systems. It works good to control people, but it never does the right things. I've discovered that one of the necessities of healing is to notice what I'm feeling and then give space to that feeling so that part of me that is wounded could integrate and heal instead of reacting. So when I'm afraid, now I sit with it instead of rushing to get rid of it. Fear-based systems only make us vulnerable to whatever that group's system is trying to sell us. organized religion, when we consider this, which we did in our book, Out Into the Desert, we considered it carefully. We concluded that organized religion was not the choice for us, and there were many systemic issues associated with it that make it not even close to the right answer. We have to be open and evolving. We have to be thinking and asking questions. But I'm always looking forward with a sense of evolution, not reconstruction. When we go back to arguing scripture from a different vantage point, we're trying to preserve the practices and beliefs of the past. I'm learning to thrive and learning to evolve forward. Thus the title of this book, Leaning Forward. The process requires an openness that I didn't used to have. I've discovered some things, but everything is open to new discoveries, and I'm partial to that. It's my ongoing disposition that I'm on a journey of discovery, and I'm open to all possibilities that nurture me and help me grow. This is the attitude that I choose to take with me into the future. Indeed, most people cannot predict the future, but we can determine what our attitude will be as we move forward authentically, grounded in the eternal now. I do encourage you to pick up our book called Leaning Forward, Finding Peace Beyond the Confines of Religion. We spent a lot of time in introspection. We've listened to a lot of stories, but these are our condensed thoughts in the best we can do. I hope you'll enjoy it, that you'll gain something from it, and maybe even pick up the study guide that you can get by emailing me at the emails that post on our social media and so on. But check us out at Leaning Forward. Check out the YouTube that has much, much more videos and information, and the podcasts are there and everything now. So please like and subscribe to that. And we wish you well. Be where you are, be who you are, and be at peace.
Thank you for joining us today on the Desert Sanctuary Podcast.
Remember, all who wander in the desert are not lost.
We believe all of our stories are sacred.
We are always here if you need someone to hear your story.
Check out our blog on Pathios and also our YouTube channel.
And stay tuned for our Leaning Forward Conference.
Remember, we love you.
And be at peace.